full 4 minute song, so if we would have let that play, we would have been sitting here a while, Tony.
That's fine.
Don't get me wrong.
Better than what they have now, right?
I got nothing against the Union Underground, don't get me wrong, but I don't think anybody listening to the show wants to listen to that song in its entirety before we get to our conversation about the events at hand. Good evening, and welcome to The Reaction, a presentation of the... I almost said the WTOM Network because I'm so used to doing the kickoff like that. A presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network online at thechairshot.com. Getting my podcast mixed up. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What's up?
Liz had thunderstorm issues. Her power got knocked out.
That sucks.
No power, no Wi-Fi, no Wi-Fi, no tablet, no tablet, no phone call.
Yep.
Therefore, no Liz tonight. Tony, I'm giving you a 1 week in advance notice. There won't be a show next week.
All right. Yeah, here's some football teams playing.
The Bills are the Monday night football game, and I will be watching that. So, I mean, technically, the team they're playing is right outside of your scope, but you can't have people at the bar to watch the game anyway.
Yeah, man, we are closed. We're open for to-go only. I actually was at the restaurant the entire day today, previous to Raw, to help my employees fill out unemployment. And it's like a, not a depressing moment, but just like, you know, unfortunate. A bunch of them are kids, so they don't know what the hell they're doing.
I would assume, though, that most of them know that their jobs will be waiting for them once this whole thing ends, like once you can hire them back again.
Definitely on hold. And our governor is saying 3 weeks. I anticipated going a little bit further than that. I assume that we will be closed until next year.
I'm thinking probably New Year's as well, just because I'm expecting a major spike due to the two major holidays between Thanksgiving and Christmas coming.
Yeah, so just kind of holding on to that, you know, giving them a little bit of a – I mean, since they're kids, the good news is they don't really have any pressing bills, you know. I kind of I would assume realistically, just to give you a little bit of insight, my job, I could easily just be like, you know, fill out unemployment, we'll call you when we're open, blah, blah, blah. But I just have this innate responsibility to make sure that, you know, they're not stressed out at home or mentally, you know, because they're kids and because they're – you know, can face certain anxieties. And I mean, you and I both know about the mental health and how kind of, you know, how difficult it can be. The last thing I want to do is give them one more stressor. So I try to be there in a counseling capacity as well.
Tony Acero, humanitarian.
Only for my staff.
Unless they're Superman fans and then they get written up.
Yeah, they do in pen.
How was your weekend, Tony? How was your holiday? Did you do anything for Thanksgiving?
Just went to my parents' house. We usually keep it small every year anyway, so it wasn't some grand, you know, evening. It was par for the course, nothing crazy. Amazing turkey, good food. I forgot the veggies, but I did bring the alcohol, so we had some good times.
Always forgiven.
Yeah.
I feel like if there's one alcohol to drink at Thanksgiving, it would be Wild Turkey. Wouldn't it? Wouldn't that make the most sense?
Wild Turkey is an ass-kicker of a drink, so I would be very careful.
I mean, I don't drink personally. I'm straight edge. I think we've discussed this before, the irony of the bartender working with the straight edge guy.
Yep.
So I personally don't drink, but I just figure if there was one holiday where that drink would be appropriate, it would be this one. Your parents, brothers, and the thug?
Yep.
I had an invitation to one of my friends' house. Her son is basically like my nephew. I've known him since he was 10 months old. He's 12 now, as in 12 years old, not 12 months. So I have a longstanding relationship with the family and everything, and they knew that with my family being out of state and everything going on, I wasn't going to be able to see any of them, so they invited me to come over for Thanksgiving. Just a small group of us, turkey, mashed potatoes, corn, cranberry sauce, you know, the Thanksgiving traditionals, football,
yeah.
Watching the Dallas Cowboys get smoked again. Always entertaining to me, at least. But that's it. That's enough about our personal lives. What do you say we get to the reason we're actually here to do this show for?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about wrestling.
All right, let's talk about SmackDown to start. Actually, you know what? Since I need to stall for a few moments until I can actually get to the SmackDown report, NXT TakeOver War Games is this Sunday. You have any interest in watching?
I always have interest in watching. I just can never watch. I do have a little bit more time on my hands due to, you know, the layoffs. So I might be able to squeeze this one in. But realistically, with the 3 weeks off that I'm given, I'm going to try to use it to finish up my writing. So I'll see if I can squeeze it in. War Games is just, I mean, it's War Games, you know, it's exciting. I just can't promise that I'll watch it before the show next week.
Well, there's not going to be a show next week.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I got time.
You do. You have 2 weeks to watch it if you want to. Any particular War Games moment you're looking forward to? The women's one, the men's one, the strap match? Anything in particular jumping out at you? I don't know how much of the weekly NXT you get to watch.
Yeah, I'm going in pretty blind, so it would be mostly for wrestling. I'll try to catch up by reading reports, but this will be mostly just going in to enjoy the product.
Yeah, because I was going to say, basically, with you covering Dynamite every week, and where do you cover Dynamite every week?
411 Wrestling, 411mania.com in the wrestling section, and I do cover Dynamite, and I love it so much. I get paid by Tony Khan to cover it, so.
If you're interested in checking the NXT coverage over there, do you have any idea how his last name is pronounced? I think it's Pantoja.
I think so, yeah.
The NXT coverage is provided on 411 Wrestling by Kevin Pantoja. He does a really good job. Plus, I like his old school show reviews too. So, shout out to Kevin. The big thing for me with NXT is these takeovers rarely disappoint. Like, even a bad takeover is a good wrestling show, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, the worrisome thing, though, is that they've set the bar of expectations so high for NXT TakeOver that you question whether or not they'll be able to continually live up to it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see what happens there. All right, I'm ready. I have the SmackDown review in front of me. You ready to do this?
Yep.
All right, so it is the post-SmackDown, it is the post-Thanksgiving episode of SmackDown, which is weird. There was no Thanksgiving-themed stuff on this episode. Did that surprise you?
I mean, I guess not. It just probably timing. And I mean, this goes into a lengthy discussion with the writing team, but I'll try to shorten it. I really feel that these guys are just they're playing catch up, and they've been playing catch up for several years. So stuff just kind of either goes completely under the radar, or they do a rushed version of it, and it turns out not that great.
All right, a couple of major things to discuss from the show. Let's get to them. The Intercontinental Champion Sami Zayn takes on Daniel Bryan in non-title action. Bryan picks up a loss here as Sami gets a win by countout due to Bryan being jumped in the backstage area after Sami tried to run away by Jey Uso. Two-parted question here. One, what did you think of the match? Two, do you like the idea of continuing Jay's feud with Daniel Bryan to give Uso more credibility as a single star, or would you rather see Bryan against Zayn for the Intercontinental title?
Well, it's kind of tough. What I enjoy here is that we have interchangeable characters that are moving up and down the card, and it's believable. What I like is that at any given time, Daniel Bryan can shoot for the IC title, and you would believe it. Or he can go after Roman, and you would believe that as well. Or he could have a match with Jey Uso, and you would believe that. Daniel Bryan's one of those rare characters that can do it, and you'll stand behind him. You won't think that he's in over his head or being shoved down the cart. What I also like is because of that, he's able to elevate Sami to a level where I don't think he's been ever, at least with this current run. So So that automatically helps him. And then Jey Uso, who previous to this Roman Reigns storyline was a tag team, you know, person who was great by all means, is now officially a main event character. So I don't really care where Bryan is at as long as he's on TV, because he's doing great things and everything kind of works together. You know, it's very rare on wrestling. I have noticed a significant shift towards this over the last 2 to 3 months. And it's more blatant and more obvious on SmackDown, and I love it. And that's why I think people are kind of gravitating towards the show a bit more recently. You do see it on Raw a little bit, namely with Drew and Sheamus. But I feel like they're taking time with building relationships amongst characters, and it's showing, and I think that they're reaping the benefits. Case in point, Daniel Bryan versus Sammy on Friday. I thought it was a great match. I didn't mind the ending. I think that there's more story to tell. And, yeah, I wouldn't mind if Bryan went for the IC title, but I also am totally cool with the direction that he's going now.
Because the reports were that they're going to run it back between Bryan and Uso at TLC, and I actually think that that kind of works out if you're going to go with the possible plant direction of Bryan and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
Right.
So I think that there's an opportunity to tell an open-ended story coming out of the Jey Uso match. If Bryan wins, then he's taking out one member of the family on his way to the top. If he takes a loss at TLC, it doesn't necessarily hurt him because it's Uso stepping up to protect the family. But at the same time, it's Bryan having to find yet another way to overcome in order to get at Roman Reigns, regardless of what happens
right
in the main event match, TLC, which we'll get to here in a few moments.
And if Jey wins, it's most definitely going to be by way of excessive force and heelish tactics to the point where he's going to do anything he can do to protect his family name, which is, you know, I don't always get behind the, you know, the excessive force, but this has been done really well. And Jay's got a point to prove, and he's got a name to protect, and he's got Roman Reigns in his ear.
Speaking of that point to prove that Uso had, he actually tried to prove it against Kevin Owens in the main event on SmackDown. That did not go so well for him, as Kevin Owens, after the original chair shot by Jey Uso, proceeded to beat Jey Uso's ass all over ringside, calling out Roman Reigns the entire time, which seemingly sets up our SmackDown title match for the SmackDown WWE heavyweight title match for table setters and chairs as Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens. I have to say, I am invested in this match. I am intrigued. And going the family route with Kevin Owens was absolutely the 100% correct decision, given the fact that Owens' character this entire time has been established that he fights for his family.
Yeah. I mean, just Kevin Owens in the main event picture is something that I've sorely missed. The last time we got it, we didn't get nearly enough. And he's been flirting with it ever since, but just not to the level that I think he deserves. And although I don't think he's going to take the title from Roman, it's a nice story to get us to the Rumble. And Owens brings the intensity whenever he needs to. I mean, we've talked about it before. Everything they hand him, he's going to do whatever he can with and make it gold. I half expected Jey Uso to attack everybody on the Survivor Series team throughout the show. I thought that would have been cool. But this was also cool because it shows the reality that Jey Uso is not just some untouchable guy all of a sudden. He still is very much, mid-card, I guess, but it's not necessarily the skill set that you're interested in. It's how much he's willing to do for his family and for the name of his family.
So basically the top of the card for SmackDown Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, looks like Reigns and Owens, Bryan and Uso, and then a run back for the tag titles between the Street Profits and Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. In the opening contest on SmackDown, we saw Roode and Ziggler pick up a victory over the Street Profits when Robert Roode pinned, Montez Ford with a roll-up. I think this is a wasted opportunity for Roode, because he had so much momentum when he came back and had that banger against McIntyre on Raw, that putting him back into this tag team with Ziggler just seems like a step backwards, does it not?
Anytime you team up with Ziggler, it's a step backwards. I didn't like this entire segment. The jokes were not funny. Street Profits were – I feel like when they're allowed to be themselves, they come off genuine and cool and hip. But when they're scripted – it's like the one thing that people like about the Street Profits is removed, and they come off as pretty hokey. And calling Dolph Ziggler like HB, saying he looked like HBK, or saying that, I don't, that just felt really, really flat to me. Like, it just didn't, they didn't need to go that route. And then the idea that Rude and Ziggler are even in the running for a tag team title shot just shows, A, how shallow the pool is for tag teams, and B, how uninteresting the tag team division is. Because Rude and Ziggler, I don't care how many belts they've won before, I've never been interested in them as a team. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't see a unification amongst the two of them. Just the whole segment fell flat. What was the other thing he said? Oh yeah, that he couldn't grow, or Rude could only grow a mustache while he's got a full ass beard on. Like, these are so little, all right? And they shouldn't bug anybody, but it bugs the fuck out of me.
Well, technically Corey Graves and Cole explained that, referencing back to Rude's glorious porn stash that he had earlier this year.
But that, okay, then maybe that joke would have worked earlier this year. It didn't make any sense right there.
I agree.
He's got a full-on beard on. Like, it's right there.
That wasn't just a beard. That was a goatee, sir.
The boy knows facial. Like, he can grow facial. It's just one of those weak, you know, insults that don't hold any water.
Hey, speaking of things that didn't hold water, segue! Baron Corbin and Murphy.
Boy, this was the moment where I thought Jey Uso was going to come out and clock Corbin with a chair, and I would have just been like, yay!
Okay, so I don't dislike the Aaliyah and Murphy thing. I think people are up in arms over for no discernible goddamn reason. The woman's 20 years old. Shut the fuck up. But the issue that I have here is Murphy just stood toe-to-toe with Rollins over the course of two out of the last three SmackDowns, and now all of a sudden he needs help beating Baron Corbin? That doesn't track. More to the point, yeah, Corbin got in their face backstage a little bit. Of course, we all saw that segment earlier before the match there. But suddenly the babyfaces decide to engage in a four-on-one intimidation tactic against Corbin? What fucking sense does that make? This entire segment made my head hurt, Tony.
Yeah, that was garbage. I mean, it's not like, you know, every babyface needs to be great and every heel needs to be evil, but this was very, like, blatantly just, what?
Out of
what,
character?
Why would we even care? We're supposed to care about these guys, right, in this love affair that they're having, in this relationship that has bloomed out of, you know, evil that is Seth Rollins, and then you go and do what Seth Rollins would do, and you're happy about it. Like,
Like, when has it ever been in Rey Mysterio's character as a babyface to put his nose in somebody else's match? When has Rey Mysterio ever been one to say, ah, you suck? Or, like, showing him ringside applauding on Murphy? Fine, whatever. Family bonding, I can get that. Him blatantly distracting Corbin during a match that he's not involved in was stupid and so out of character for Mysterio that it took me out of the match. And now the reports are there's going to be a rematch this week on SmackDown, and Corbin's bringing some backup, which is stupid for Corbin. His gimmick the entire time is the lone wolf. Why would he want to associate himself with anybody? Jesus Christ, Tony.
Yeah, this was I don't know. It's like someone took 3 weeks off of creative and then came back and said, okay, where are we at? And, and didn't realize that shit's already moved on, or that things are different, or I don't know. It's really weird. I saw some of that tonight, too, on Raw. Like, just such a weird juxtaposition to have last week be pretty good, in my opinion, to this week just fall right back into the same, you know, boring and just...
See, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I fully agree with that, because I think Raw had its moments, but there were definitely some head-scratchers on tonight's Raw, too, but we'll get to that in a few moments here. The other thing that we might have in store for TLC for SmackDown side is Intercontinental Champion Sami Zayn defending against Big E, and I think I'm there for this. The little backstage segment that they had where Sami was telling Big E that he's beaten people for a count of 10 lately, so what makes Big E think he's going to be any different? And Big E offers his congratulations and proceeds to squeeze Sammy's hand for 10 seconds, and you're right, that is impressive. Congratulations, Sammy.
It was, you see his little comment when he hit five? I thought that was cool.
My favorite number? Yes. That was a nice callback to his NXT days. You made me lose my train of thought there. Hold on a second. I'll find it in a second. I got it. Okay. I'm here for Big E. I mean, yeah, it came off a little hokey, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, Hokey's kind of in Big E's wheelhouse. He's not fully serious unless he absolutely has to be. And he flipped that switch once he started shaking Sammy's hand as well, from being that jovial goofball to counting along and getting more intense as he did so.
Mm-hmm.
SmackDown side of the TLC card's looking pretty good, Tony, I got to tell you.
Yeah, not too bad.
We once again see interactions between Sasha and Carmella, this time in the backstage segment for Carmella that Sasha interrupts by throwing either water or champagne in her face, whatever it was. They get into a little bit of a cat fight before the officials break it up. In addition, we start a feud in the women's division between Bianca Belair and Bayley. And I got to tell you, I think this is Bianca's biggest test so far as to whether or not she can hang with the racehorses of the WWE's women's division.
Yeah, I'm gonna be totally okay with the minimal story being told here, just because I think it's going to be a good match. Carmella, we've said it before, we've seen this character, literally the exact same promo I've heard for years in wrestling. You know, I used to do it for the fans, now I do it for me, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if it's her lazy eye or just the angle that Sasha was hiding, but she has horrible peripheral vision if she didn't see that coming. The sooner this storyline gets over with, the better, because I would love to see Sasha fight anybody else except Nia Jax or Lana.
And Asuka again. We could do without her facing Asuka. The matches have been good, but let's not overdo it. I was waiting for the AJ Lee sound effect there, Tony. I'm a little disappointed.
Nah, I'm not even near my laptop.
All right. The last thing that I wanted to discuss was the opening promo by Roman Reigns with Jey Uso there, with Roman calling out Uso for his involvement in the championship match, even though he helped Reigns pick up the victory. It seemed like Roman was kind of pissed off that Jey got involved because he told Uso to leave. And then instead of leaving, Uso stayed in the building and helped Reigns pick up the win in the match at Survivor Series against McIntyre. And in addition, Reigns once again brings up the fact that the SmackDown team proceeded to not listen to Jey because they didn't respect him. And if they don't respect Jey, then they don't respect Roman. You know, we've talked for years on this show that we think they needed to turn Roman Hill in order to refreshen his act. I don't think you or I, in our wildest dreams, envisioned Roman being this good at it.
I mean, you could tell, you know, it's not hard to deduce. It's also not hard. Well, I don't want to discredit actual wrestlers that have been doing this for years, so I won't say it's not hard. But I will say that having been in the industry even just a little bit, even a little cup of coffee that I had, it is so much easier to be a heel, an effective heel, than it is to be a babyface. And when you look at the Roman Reigns character currently, there is a lot to pull from. There is the legitimacy of the family. There is the reality that right now he is the biggest name in that family outside of The Rock. And The Rock's not in the industry, so he's the one at the table. The Rock's got his own fucking house, like never mind the table. So he's taking control, and there is some warped mentality where it's like you're a representative of this family, and you know, they don't respect you. And if they don't respect you, they don't respect me, because this is my fucking table. This is my business. I'm the champion. So it all, like, makes sense. And, you know, a good heel, an effective heel, is one that truly believes in what they're saying. So I don't think it's a stretch that, you know, his success has been as good as it has been. I think that it's always been there. They just needed the right story and the trust in him to run with it. They're so interested in making him a face and so hard up on trying to make him the next John Cena that they didn't realize that, you know, the first Roman Reigns is just fine.
Overall show rating for Friday's episode of SmackDown, Tony?
You know, I don't fully remember. I'm going to have to say probably like a 7.5. I remember the wrestling being focused mainly on Sammy and Brian, but the storylines moved forward. Everybody played their role right, with the exception the whole Rey Mysterio, the whole Mysterio family. I'm not interested.
I'm slightly higher than you are, but I'm taking points off for the exact same reason. I gave it an 8, but it got dropped from a 9 because of the Mysterio segment. Everything else was fantastic, in my opinion, even if the finish to Bianca and Natalya was a little bit wonky with Bayley's involvement. At least it's progressing things in an interesting direction with Bianca taking a step-up competition in terms of the current crop. By the way, you don't give it a rating anymore on 411 because you don't write the SmackDown report anymore. Robert Winfrey does, and with all due respect to Mr. Winfrey, you should probably stick to MMA. I don't dislike Robert because I actually find his MMA reports really good. It's just clear that he doesn't care about wrestling, if that makes sense.
Shit, I thought I was rough. It's funny, I took it off so that I could start working again on Friday night, and now I don't need to.
Technically speaking, wouldn't you still be working if you guys are open for carryout?
I don't necessarily have to be there in a managerial capacity from 7 to 9 my time. So, actually, I think it would be 5 to 7. Never mind. So, yeah, I would. What I used to do is rush home, watch SmackDown, cover it, report, type up the review, and then head back to work to be there in time for the rush on a Friday night. But now that we have to close by 10, there's no rush. There's just a hopeful flow of people that support us.
That come in, order food to take it with them, and then leave.
Mm-hmm.
Support your local businesses, everybody. They need your help now. They need your help now more than ever. All right. Do me a favor. Check the call key. See if there's a caller waiting.
Nope. I don't see anyone.
All right. Liz just got her power back, so she might call in, but she's not really going to be able to discuss much of Raw because she didn't get to see much of it, but it'd still be nice to hear her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sending her a message real quick here. With that, we move over to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, Tony, and I will go ahead and let you take the opening for the first thing you want to discuss for Raw while I figure everything out, Liz.
Well, I mean, as I said not too long ago, Raw seemed to me, in my opinion, to be a complete switch from last week. Like I said, I feel like someone took the day off last week and it helped out, and then they came back this week and kind of just reverted back to normal crap. In particular, I mean, I guess it'd be best to start the show with the way that Raw started with regards to Randy Orton and Alexa. So Alexa Bliss had a moment of bliss. She was in full Fiend character, which is equal parts adorable and psychotic, which is great. Orton came out to try to one-up the psychoness. What's up?
Is it wrong to say that it's like Harley Quinn hot? Would that make sense?
No, I think that's exactly what she's going for, so it's not wrong.
It's like sexually adorable, but scary as fuck at the same time.
Yeah, she might kill you in your sleep, but you know that's part of the risk, Carrie. You know.
It's that Vicky Mendoza line. If you're familiar with How I Met Your Mother.
Yep.
You must be this hot to be this crazy.
Oh yeah. and she is way up there in the upper right-hand corner of the graph.
Damn near unicorn, sir. Actually, if she's crazy, she would be in the bottom right. You know, crazy scale.
Yeah, I don't know. So, anyways, Orton tried to one-up her with crazy, basically saying, like, in order to figure out how to beat Bray, I had to strike where he was vulnerable, and he sees Alexa Bliss as that weak point in the armor of the Fiend. So it's an interesting fold into the storyline that they've been going with. I'm kind of okay with Orton not being freaked out or taken over by the mind games, although I'm not 100% sure what kind of relationship they're building with the Fiend and Alexa Bliss, because it hasn't been very explicit. And for her to be his weak point, I don't know. I'm not sure that I like that. I'm not bothered by it, but it just seems so humanizing, you know?
We've been talking about the fact that we thought the Fiend character's been overpowered anyway, though. So maybe this is kind of what we needed in order to bring down some semblance of vulnerability to the character.
But what's Orton going to do? Burn Alexa Bliss? Like, I don't know. Is he going to cure her? Well, you know?
Do you think they would have Orton hit Alexa with an RKO?
I don't know. It wouldn't, like, I wouldn't be offended, but the world's weird right now.
They tend to shy away from men on women violence, which is why I question in the first place, because I guarantee you, 2004, Bliss is eating an RKO.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the only reason I question it is because of the fact that we live in the culture that we live in now, with everything being so hesitant toward any kind of men-on-women violence, even in the consensual nature such as the WWE. You still with me, Tony?
Yep. Okay, Alexa Bliss is crazy.
That's your big takeaway from this whole segment. I don't dislike it. But I do think that you're running close to that AJ Lee line with Alexa here between Wyatt and Orton. And I don't necessarily think that's a road you want to go down either.
Why'd you have to bring her up?
Honestly, I was aiming for the sound effect, if I'm being real with you.
No. I mean, this is a storyline that I'm not upset about, so I'm willing to kind of wait and see. Although tonight, I think kind of it was a weird next chapter for sure. Nothing like overtly offensive, just kind of like, okay, I suppose. At least there was no camera mess ups.
All right, let's talk retribution, shall we?
Okay.
Accept it, Tony. I'm going to support this regardless because I support Mustafa Ali. And
well,
honestly, would you rather talk this or Nia Jax and Lana?
I mean, both of them are going to get the same amount of hatred, so you can go ahead and flip a coin.
See, I don't think that the vitriol needs to be there for, yes, Dana Brooke coming through the audience and slapping Mustafa was stupid. But it kind of makes sense from a character perspective that odds are a Retribution probably ordered the attack on Brooke in order to take her out. And if Retribution on Mia Yim's character, I forget Mia's what is her reckoning? She's fucking Mia Yim. Anyway. If Reckoning attacked Dana Brooke before the Survivor Series, odds are Mustafa Ali was the one who gave the green light. So I can understand why Dana Brooke would be mad at Mustafa Ali. The distraction didn't work, and in the end, Shane Thorne picked up the win over Ricochet to continue the attempted recruiting of Ricochet by Retribution, specifically by Mustafa, because he feels like Ricochet is a genuinely good guy who's just going down a bad path. What did you think of the Slapjack and Ricochet match?
Well, so these guys are supposed to be some kind of threat. They're supposed to come off as even the least bit scary or intimidating or even crazy. And everything that I've seen proves the complete opposite. This was a Ricochet match by all definitions. It was all Ricochet. He got all the offense. And the few moves that Slapjack got in were unimpressive. He's a run of the, you know, the guy behind the mask, sure, maybe he's great. But what we saw tonight was a run-of-the-mill wrestler who, you know, did nothing impressive. And if their continued plight is to show that they have been oppressed and that they deserve, you know, better, and that wrestlers like Ricochet deserve better, they can't possibly prove that with all the damage that's been done and continuously losing or coming off as losers, even in a win, like they continue to do. There's nothing redeemable here. There's nothing.
All right, you mentioned that this match was a Ricochet spotlight, and I don't disagree with that, but I think that's almost kind of the point of the match as well, in that having somebody of Ricochet's ability inside a Retribution would make them that much more dangerous.
So I want you to be on my team, so beat the guy that I'm making you face to teach you a lesson so that you could be on my team. That basically puts Slapjack completely down. Like, well, you're fodder for people that are better.
I mean, we've seen it before. Weak links and
that
teams.
It just doesn't go with what Ali, and then him yelling, which I guess we could fast forward to, yelling at Mia Yim for losing, saying we don't lose. That's all that they've done.
Poor Mia. Do you notice her gimmick fell apart while she was in the middle of her match?
I believe that I said in my summary, Reckoning making her debut should have been, where'd it go?
Found it.
Damn, Rob, so long. Should have mattered
cover
even
and
a
reckoning.
Little bit.
Cover
but
and Reckoning's
was...
map. Oh, go ahead.
Here, I got it. Reckoning making her debut should have mattered even a little bit. But if there was ever a metaphor for this gimmick as simply not working, her mask falling off 2 seconds into her match is as good as any.
Ouch.
We're not supposed to acknowledge. I mean, I'm not saying they should have acknowledged it. You know, shit happens. And the best thing that a wrestler can do is the show must go on. Keep going. But this just goes to show how unnecessary that whole thing is. And Dana Brooke winning is just, what was that? This match was 2 minutes long, and Dana just, I'm thinking this is step one of a story to give her a little bit more of an edge, to give Mia Yim a little bit more. Like, you lost, now you need to do something big to regain Ali's respect. But as I've said before, the damage is just done. There's nothing here. And Dana is the worst possible person to give somebody a rub.
All right, I'm gonna look at an alternative way of this here, and I know this is me kind of fantasy booking again, and you hate when I do that. Do you think the mask coming off was intentional?
No.
But they could spin it that it was intentionally accidental, and it took Mia off of her game. It took Reckoning off of her game. Yeah, I completely disagree with the decision. I completely disagree with the decision to put Dana over Reckoning here, especially if there's one division where you could have Retribution do something with it, the women's division, because I think Reckoning and Asuka could have an incredible matchup together. They work a very similar style. Reckoning could carry the mic work for the contest there, and the piped-in crowd noise would definitely be behind Asuka.
Yeah, I mean, and this was yet another match where we had a debuting person, and we really didn't get much from them. You know, we didn't get a lot of much of anything, really. So I have somebody on hold, but their number is showing 111 all the way across. Do you want me to bring them on, or?
You can try it.
I love that, Harry.
This is
Hi, welcome
you.
To the reaction. I love that, Harry. No, not
you.
The reaction. All right. Anyways.
So much for that.
Sound like a call from the past. That was weird.
This is on you, Tony. I don't know if you caught that or not.
No.
Anywho, back to tonight's episode of Raw at Hand. Let's talk about a couple of the highlights from tonight's show then, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
Let's talk about the triple threat match for the number one contendership to Drew McIntyre's Universal Heavyweight Championship Drew McIntyre's WWE Championship at Roman Reigns' Universal Championship. I mixed those two belts up, didn't I? Because I think I called Roman the WWE Champion. Whatever. McIntyre's WWE Championship number one contender is crowned in the triple threat single fall match tonight between AJ Styles, Keith Lee, and Riddle. And we kind of talked about the possibilities of where we would like to see this go here. I don't think either of us had Styles picking up the victory, but I'm not opposed to it either. I like the idea between McIntyre and Styles because I don't think we've ever seen those two in a one-on-one match on WWE TV. And if we have, it wasn't anything that had any kind of importance behind it. This is the first match that they've had against each other with anything, any kind of gravitas.
Yeah, you know, I think even without a prize to be won, so AJ is like the last remnant of the wrestlers that we're used to that still have the skill and the speed and the wherewithal. And then Lee and Riddle are this like new breed where everything looks like it hurts. And rather than having Styles mesh or match up against one another and not work, they mesh together really well. Riddle has speed and tenacity behind his moves, whereas Lee is methodical and almost slow to the point where you're just like, bro, come on. And then explosive moves out of nowhere. You put that together, it's great. But you throw AJ Styles in there, I was thoroughly impressed with tonight's match. And I was impressed mainly because I knew what I was going to get, and they still won me over. Like, I thought it was great. And these guys have continued to impress me through many combinations. Riddle and Sheamus, awesome. Lee and AJ, Lee just being Lee. I know I feel like people are weird where they're looking for anything to complain about. Like, oh, his entrance music sucks. Like, well, I don't care if he comes out to fucking Yankee Doodle. Like, if he kills it in the ring, that's what I want. So that never mattered to me. I didn't really care. Some people saying that his promos are like William Shatner. That just, it goes in line with what he's doing in the ring, where he's thinking everything through. He's, you know, he's pausing at the right moments. And at times, I do feel it's a bit too scripted. But the delivery, the cadence, the movements that he makes, his head movements, his the backstage segment where Riddle just won't shut up and he just looks at his watch, all those things means he knows exactly who Keith Lee, the character, is. And it's all encompassed in the wrestler. And to me, that's just, I love that. Even Riddle, to his credit, Stoner, and again tonight we saw a little bit too heavy on the script, but the character's there, and we know he knows who he is. Unfortunately for WWE, they must have found out that we really liked the segment with MVP because they gave us another one almost exactly the same. WWE is not known for their subtlety or their, you know, ability to create something new. So it's not something that I'm shocked about, but back to the match, these guys put on, I think, a fucking banger, and everything mattered, and I just had a good time. This was the highest point of the night for me, for sure.
You know what the problem
was? Probably should have ended the show.
You know what the problem for me was? The match was just too damn short.
Yeah, I get that. The ending was a little bit abrupt. It was a damn near 15-minute match. Did not feel like it. It just, the ending was like, you know, I felt like he's getting his ass beat for quite some time, and then a couple knees sent him outside. I could see it sending him like reeling or rolling over, but all the way to the outside to allow the pin. I think there's something a little bit more creative that could have been done there.
Couple of things from the fallout from this match to discuss, two of which are actually very important. The first of which is Riddle being disappointed and obviously not winning the match, and he is approached backstage by MVP. Riddle tries to spin it and talk more business with MVP, which again leads to the aww, which they must have heard that we liked last week and tried to work it in again, which, as you mentioned, it didn't quite work as well this time. But what did work for me is MVP sicking Lashley on Riddle. What kind of confused me, though, is with Keith Lee picking up a win over Lashley last week, we thought that that might put Keith Lee in line for the United States Championship opportunity. And now with Lashley going after Riddle backstage here, it almost puts Riddle in line for the United States title opportunity. Let me throw a match at you, Tony. I don't know how you'll feel about this. We had the triple threat tonight on Raw. How would you feel about a triple threat for the U.S. title at TLC?
I wouldn't be opposed, per se. I just worry about Lashley performing at the level that Riddle and Lee perform. I think that Lashley with Lee, you got a nice conversation going. I think that Lashley with Lee and Riddle, you're going to get the two-in-one-out formula that I know and love.
See, the only problem with doing Lashley and Lee is it kind of continues the stereotype that the Hurt Business only goes after other black wrestlers. Have you noticed that?
I mean, yeah, I've noticed. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind even Riddle versus Lashley. It's just a matter of, I just think, if the question is a triple threat, the answer is I don't think it'd come out that great.
Personally, I would like to see it be a singles match, and I think you can save Riddle versus Lee for the United States title as a one-on-one match for WrestleMania. If that would be a route that they would be interested in going. I think that those two have a history with each other that they now own the rights to with Evolve. They have a lot of interaction together and on their time on the main roster already. It's clear they have a chemistry together between the backstage segments that they've been in and the stuff they've done together in the ring as well. I think that Keith Lee and Riddle against each other could end up being an excellent feud, just as much as possibly them being a team as well, but I don't think you need to go that team route with them since you seem to be going the team route with the next thing that we'll talk about.
All right, let's go.
No comment on Lee versus Riddle as a potential WrestleMania match?
I mean, sure.
You're no fun sometimes, Tony. You know that? Conversational movement. All right, moving on. So, after Styles wins the triple threat, he is approached by Miz and Morrison, who earlier in the evening had attacked Sheamus on an episode of The Dirt Sheet. Or wait, was it Miz TV? I think it was Miz TV. And how is Morrison okay with just being a sidekick on Miz TV when they used to have a show? Whatever. Regardless, they attacked Sheamus on an episode of Miz TV. McIntyre did not make the save for Sheamus, which led some people to believe that Sheamus was going to turn on McIntyre tonight. Backstage, Miz and Morrison approach AJ Styles about the possibility of them working together in order to get Miz the opportunity to cash in his Money in the Bank contract. And seemingly, Styles is all for it because he's of the opinion that Miz would be a lot easier to beat for the WWE title than Morrison would be. Even offering to bribe AJ with a peach pie. Overall, what did you make of the backstage segment between Styles, Miz, Morrison, and Omos?
All right, so I love AJ, and his response is, you know, flippant, like, yeah, I'll help you, you know, because me beating your ass is a lot easier than me beating Drew's. I love that. That's so AJ Styles. That's the guy that refused to have a weekly Intercontinental Championship match because he's not that kind of person. He's not going to fight in a tournament to face somebody because he doesn't have to. So that made 100% sense. And I really enjoyed that.
My favorite part of that was Jomo agreeing that Miz would be easier to beat than McIntyre, and Miz just shooting him one of those "fuck you" looks.
Yeah, so I love that. Everything that the Miz and Morrison has done since Morrison has returned has been complete garbage in my mind. I don't see the entertainment value. They're not funny. They're not even like annoying to where you want them to get their ass beat. They're just annoying. It's just, you know, the correct thing and the back and forth banter. They're not. It's not entertaining. It's not. The Miz is great by himself, and there's proof of that tonight. Morrison, he's also not bad by himself. But together, it just doesn't work for me. In the ring, they're cutting a promo, or they're talking about Sheamus, and the Miz turns talking smack Miz, you know, mode, and goes in on Sheamus not getting a title shot for damn near 5 years and just being an afterthought. And in that small moment, you remember that the Miz can murder on the mic. And unfortunately, all that did for me was make me even more upset because it's surrounded by so much "I'm funny" and this and that and "I'm clever." And it's just like, why can't we just get that? Just that is fine. Can I have just that? I would love it. That's all you needed to do. Sheamus, for his part, did well. What I don't enjoy about this is everything that we've kind of, especially you, have predicted happening with Sheamus and Drew possibly going to WrestleMania to face each other. We've been watching it play out organically. And today, they grabbed a hammer and they smacked everybody over the head with it. Like, we don't, again, they're not good with subtlety, but tonight was just blatant. Like, literally, Keith Lee, after losing a number one contendership, the first thing he wonders and worries about is talking to Sheamus to make sure he doesn't screw Drew McIntyre over. Commentary constantly saying it, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Miz trying to persuade Sheamus into turning on Drew. Like, man, who do they think they're writing for?
That takes us to our main event, which was Sheamus and Drew McIntyre as a team, which Tony has been asking for, taking on Miz and Morrison. Now, I know you haven't been impressed by Miz and Morrison's in-ring work with each other on the microphone, but I'd argue their tag stuff is some of the best of their career together. And I really enjoyed tonight's main event tag match.
Yeah, I'll never insult them in the ring, especially Morrison. The dude is like 55 and can still go. So, I mean, man. But yeah, it's just two separate things for me for sure. They deserve all the love in the world for, you know, being great performers, but the mic work is just horrible.
Let's talk about the way that this match specifically ended, because I'm sure that's what we're probably going to get into most, shall we?
Sure.
All right. So we see AJ attack Drew with a phenomenal forearm in order to cause a disqualification. Normally, I would bitch about that, but in this instance, I think it works because we constantly talk about how the Money in the Bank holder always seems to drop falls and stuff. So this, at least to an extent, protects Miz from dropping the fall in this match. You get AJ getting a little bit of a shot in before his match with McIntyre at TLC, and you get the tease of Miz cashing in the contract after AJ hits the phenomenal forearm and then Jomo hits Starship Pain on McIntyre as well. However, they take too long arguing amongst each other, and Morrison ends up getting backdropped over to the floor. Miz ends up rolling out, or Miz eats a Claymore, excuse me, and then before AJ and McIntyre can get physical, Almas pulls AJ out of the ring in order to prevent any physicality between the two of them. Two-part question.
Yep.
One, did you like the way that Miz and AJ's dissension amongst each other caused Miz the opportunity to cash in the briefcase? Two, were you expecting Sheamus to be waiting in the ring when the camera came back to Drew and bro kick him in the face?
So I think that AJ trying to cash in for Miz was great. I think that AJ getting carried away and cutting a promo on the shoulders of the big guy was great. The Miz not cashing in, also kind of smart on his part. We've seen Drew McIntyre take F5s and Big Show moves and all that. So, you know, a phenomenal forearm, probably not going to end it. So I like that he kind of hesitated. Although it's one of those weird moments where, like, it's funny because the ref is always in a hurry except for when they're not really going to cash in. Did I expect Sheamus to bro kick Drew? No, I didn't. And I think it would have been a really bad move for the same reason that I said with regards to the phenomenal forearm. We've seen more, you know, we've seen Drew take a lot more punishment. Secondly, if he were to have done the bro kick, then what? Miz cashes in, and then, you know, we have AJ versus Miz at TLC. Like, it just doesn't, I don't, because the ideal situation is if Sheamus was going to turn, bro kick, boom, Dre loses the title. Anything besides that, pointless turn.
So do you think that they wait longer, going closer towards the road to WrestleMania, in order to have Sheamus full-on turn here?
I mean, whether they wait longer or not, it has to be him losing the title. That I don't, you know, like, I mean, it's not going to be. It sounds like it's going to be for the belt, but I was always, since this little inkling of the possibility of them facing each other, I've strongly considered the notion that it doesn't need the title. Which is why when Randy Orton had the belt, I thought, okay, well, that's his next feud, Drew and Sheamus. But with, you know, WWE's mindset where everything needs a title, like, I guess that's the route they're going. I just don't see – I don't see a bro kick dropping Drew and Miz cashing in. You know, that doesn't make sense.
I would argue that you could have this Sheamus-Drew match at the Rumble and have them just beat the fuck out of each other, and then Miz cashes in off of that.
So, I'm just, I don't see the Miz winning anytime soon. I don't think that it's, I mean, it's ballsy, and I don't want to book this, but I'd probably do it. But I don't see them doing it.
The idea that I have is that it's like that friendly title shot that Miz kind of teased in Miz TV tonight with Morrison, stating that once he wins the WWE Championship, and I think that that's going to be a line that they come back to down the road, because once Miz does cash in, I think he's going to refuse to give Morrison a shot, and that's what's going to break up Miz and Morrison. But Miz kind of laying the seeds there for Sheamus lead me to believe that maybe Sheamus is going to challenge McIntyre to a match for the title, maybe at the Royal Rumble, and they're going to beat the hell out of each other to the point that Miz is able to take advantage of a weakened McIntyre in order to cash in. You could have McIntyre get the belt back after the Rumble cash in and go further with McIntyre and Miz, or McIntyre and Sheamus towards WrestleMania still, but in the same time, you can get rid of the Money in the Bank weight that's kind of still hanging as well.
I think that this is the worst possible time for Miz to have the briefcase, and that he needs to be nowhere near the title so long as Morrison's around.
What is going on over there, Tony?
You know what? I'm just living the life.
Anyways, what else did we need to discuss in tonight's episode of Raw that we have thus far? Cedric and Xavier had a singles match against each other that was pretty decent.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the promo before that. Kofi and Woods come out, and they talk about the G4 thing, which is kind of surprising considering the WWE being so crazy against Twitch and every other third-party platform. I want to talk about the writing here specifically because it really bugged me. Kofi and Woods talk about dreams, and it's only somewhat obvious that that's like the theme of their promo. It gets worse when the Hurt Business comes out, and they say the word dream or dreams or some variation of it, I think 4 to 5 different times. So someone wrote this, okay? Someone sat down and penned this and then gave the script to each party. And then they went out and performed it. There are often times in writing or in television where you look at something and you're like, damn, that was a moving scene, or that was a great dialogue or an even better monologue. And then there's times where you just roll your eyes because you know that this was written and someone thought it was great, but it wasn't. And this was one of those moments. This was annoying to me. And I don't know if it's just me. It might be just me. But the way that they use the word dreams and like, I'm going to crush your dreams and your dreams are over and blah, blah, blah. It was so third grade, you know, elementary show that just, it was horrible. Now, the only redeeming thing here was Cedric basically saying, fuck your dream promo. I'm going to beat your ass because I'm tired of you talking shit. I saw you do your little thing saying you beat us. Never mind this dream stuff. This is between me and you could feel it. It's palpable. These two, at least on the program, not in real life, but on the program, hate each other. Like, honestly, fuck the titles. I don't like you. And I'm going to beat your ass. And then Cedric beats his ass. That's the story. That was way more important than anything else that these guys said. That I love that. And I'm not sure if that's what they're going for. I like to think Woods and Cedric are in the back, like, okay, look, this is what we're going to do. And they just ran with it because it was impressive. And I think there's more there than there is about dreams and MVP crushing them.
Okay, so here's my whole thing with this. Yes. One second. Hold on.
Yep.
Sorry, I know it was dead air, not a podcast friend, but I just had a moment there. Give me one second. Almost threw up. I think I'm good. Stomach hasn't been my friend the last couple of days. All right, the issue that I have with doing Cedric and Xavier here is the New Day have now beaten the Hurt Business twice in as many weeks. What possible viable reason would Xavier and Kofi have to accept this match in the first place? Like, don't get me wrong, the match was decent. I think the tag team matches were better just because of the fact that I think both of these guys work better with their respective partners. And it's been a while since we've seen Cedric or Xavier in singles matches, so maybe there was a little bit of rustiness that showed throughout the course of this contest as well. But what viable concern is the Hurt Business to the New Day when the New Day has already won the last two matches?
Yeah, you know, I feel that way too, and I hope that they realize that. I hope that they use that. Because Kofi, you know, last week, that was his day off. Like, why the hell am I wrestling? But there's something there between Woods and Cedric that's going to make sure that they fight no matter how many times. Woods is going to take that challenge every single time. No amount of wins is going to be good enough. And I really think that's what he's trying to sell me, and I'm buying it. Like, they're going to lose the titles because Woods is going to give in to the match. Like, that's what I think is going to happen. And I like that. I like that. So it's just there's someone in your life that just gets under your skin. And you can beat them 100 times, but if they challenge you 101, you're going to do it just because you have to prove a point. And now Woods is mad because he lost. So I really think that's the story. I think that's what they need to focus on.
So you're okay with him still going back to this over the fact that, despite the fact that New Day's won, you think that Woods has kind of made it personal when it comes to Cedric?
I'm only okay with it if Kofi is the one that says, like, yo, we beat them. Like, we're good. And Woods is like, no, we have to do this. Like, blah, blah, he beat me last week. We got to do this, that, and whatever. And then you're going to lose the belt, and it's going to be your own, you know, your own pride and your own selfish reasoning. That's human. You know, that's easy. That's something you could relate to. Even you, Harry, we all could relate to that, I think. And those are the best stories. This is so little, too. It's like a throwaway feud in the middle of Raw, and I loved it.
All right, let's talk our opening contest from tonight's episode of Raw, the Symphony of Madness match. Now, I know you had some bones to pick with this match, the 24/7 thing being chief among them. If this was supposed to be a blow-off, why the fuck are you using it for that kind of stupid shenaniganery with regards to a title that is completely non-relevant towards the circumstances at hand, let alone Elias and Hardy teaming up to get rid of the 24/7 interlopers as well? Hated that. That being said, the match itself I thought was actually pretty good. And I think that it's something that we don't really see a whole lot of these so-called hardcore matches anymore, that they stand out on their own instead of like a standard traditional singles match would, because of the fact that you can use all of the bells and the whistles that you can't use in a traditional match.
I will admit that I was surprised. I feel like I saw this match already. That bothered me. I'm not interested in Elias versus Jeff Hardy anymore. So I was ready to hate this, but they did really well with what they had. They kept it quick, not necessarily in time, but in what happened, the amount of things that happened within that time. So I enjoyed that. They used the weaponry, if you will, great. But there's like a lot of good and a lot of bad in this match, and the bad just was eye rolling. You know, getting shocked by the speaker, Jeff damn near killing himself. You know, by swantoning on two steps.
Let's talk about that.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Sorry to cut you off. No, go ahead and finish your thought, and then we'll talk about Jeff almost dying.
Okay,
sorry.
Well, okay, just to finish it off, R-Truth in a piano, literally no reason for that. 24/7, people coming down, and Jeff and Elias basically just treating them like jobbers, back body dropping Drew Gulak and then smacking him with a guitar. That's not Jeff Hardy. I'm not mad because it's Drew. I think it's sad, but that's not Jeff Hardy. That doesn't fall in line with that character. Elias, sure, why not? But so it's just, you're doing it for the sake of comedy, and nobody thinks it's funny. Lindsay and Grand Metalik, I forgot who tried to argue with me when Grand Metalik had a shot at the Intercontinental Championship, and I explained how it was literally for that moment. Whoever that was, I don't remember who it was, case in point. He doesn't matter anymore. He only mattered for a week. So, that was not a catapult into the upper mid-card or even the mid-card. The 24/7 stuff just needs to go. It's just not anything that I'm interested in. So, and not during this match. So all of that just kind of took me out of – I didn't like it. I knew I wasn't going to. They won me over with the match, and then stuff kept happening, and I just, like, I lost. And then Jeff – you know, front flips onto steps. I mean, he had the wherewithal to grab a tambourine afterwards, so thankfully he's okay.
Yeah, let's talk about that finish and the fact that Jeff clearly didn't push that table far enough back. Jesus, that looked bad.
He's trying to beat out Matt.
Who's going to paralyze themselves first? Like, I almost feel bad saying that, but based on what we've seen between those two, both of them feel like they're one stupid bump away from being Darren Drozdoved.
Yeah, they're wild.
It's almost uncomfortable. Okay, so
go ahead. Sorry.
I can go back and I can watch the tables, ladders, and chairs matches again now because of the fact that we know that by and large these guys came out of those matches relatively unscathed. Watching them do this stuff now, current day incarnations, Matt taking the bump off of the elevator, the scissor lift that he took, where he smacked the back of his head on the concrete, and now Jeff damn near braining himself on steel steps trying to do a swanton off of a ring post. Nearly as comfortable watching them now because there is a very strong and a much more realistic expectation of them hurting themselves during this than there was back when they were younger and more able to adjust to the bumps that they were taking rather than Father Time having caught up with them a bit.
Yeah, I'm not going to judge either guy. These guys are our risk takers. They are the ones that entertained us when we were kids and didn't care about their health. We didn't give a damn. So I think it's unfair of us to judge them or even put any type of responsibility on them now. I will say, however, that, like, you know, watching Jeff front flip and land on steps was, cringe. But I think a big part of it is the weight of the match that surrounds the incident. For both Matt and Jeff, and the ones that we're talking about, it just didn't feel important enough for that risk, you know? It didn't, like, a blow-off feud with Elias that no one's interested in anyways doesn't warrant, you know, possibly breaking your neck or concussing yourself. I'm not saying there's matches that make that okay, but a TLC match for the WWE Tag Team titles in an era where they were the cream of the crop, you're going to pull out all the stops. Edge spearing Mick Foley into a flaming table is literally passing the torch. So, like, you're going to pull out all the stops. Monday night in November facing Elias surrounded by ukuleles is not that moment.
Surrounded by ukuleles while fans watch on television monitors and you probably have no artificial noise there in the building.
Yeah. So it's just picking your spots, I guess.
We've talked about adrenaline playing a role in this as well. I don't think that the adrenaline was there to be able to pull off this spot the way that they probably wanted to pull it off either.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, just watching the fall, it looked like Jeff landed on Elias first, so the banging of the steps probably wasn't nearly as bad. We also know that those steps aren't nearly as hard as one would assume. They're very hollow also, so I mean, all in all, just, you know, I hope he's okay. All reports show that he is fine, but man.
Be careful, man. I'm not going to tell him what he can and can't do because Jeff's a grown-ass man. But as somebody who's watching from a fan perspective, I really don't want to see somebody get paralyzed on national television.
No.
You weren't a WCW watcher, were you?
No.
It kind of reminds me of that one episode of Thunder where Buff Bagwell got paralyzed, at least temporarily. And, like, it took, like, 10 minutes just to get him out of the ring. I don't want to see a situation like that on WWE television. I think that wraps us up, Tony.
Sweet.
Favorite match or moment from the week?
Got to give it to the triple threat.
I'm going to go with Kevin Owens going absolute batshit on Jey Uso at the end of SmackDown, calling out Roman.
Nice.
The triple threat match was really good, but from a character perspective, Owens knocked it out of the park on Friday and re-solidified himself as a main event player on SmackDown. Greg Watry.
Okay. I'm going to give it to Nia Jax. There was a moment in that match that just,
I know where this is going. The rope.
At one point, you know, it's a tale as old as time in the wrestling lore. You go to hit the ropes so that you can, you know, get a momentum starting forward, and your opponent pulls the rope down or splits the rope in the middle, and you go tumbling through them. You know, it's happened to almost everybody, and it's something that's somewhat believable because that's one of the most common things you do is you hit the ropes and, you know, you bounce back. Nia Jax goes for this move where she goes towards the ropes, and what she's supposed to do is put her back against the ropes and catapult forward. And her opponent, Lana, is holding the rope. So at that moment, what you're supposed to do is assume that you're going to hit the ropes but actually tumble outside backwards and, you know, fall and be embarrassed and mad and whatever, right? Whatever heelish tactics you decide to do. Nia Jax faces Lana and dives forward through these split ropes, knowing damn well what she's supposed to do and not doing it at all. Lana holds the ropes like a whole 2 seconds too early, and Nia just tumbles forward, like just, it's like it's not even wrestling 101. Like, running the ropes is one of the first things they teach you, and this is just a, you know, an extension of that. I mean, that was, oh, Harry, when I tell you I was upset, Jesus.
be laughing at something that happens during a match. I laughed. Because I could hear every one of the people that I've ever worked a show with that watches Raw breaking the screen in front of them over the absolute stupidity of the way that Nia handled that. It takes a really special performance to make Lana not the worst performer in a match. Congratulations, Nia. Jesus. I'm going to go with the Murphy versus Baron Corbin match from SmackDown. Just, you know, let's burn up any and all goodwill that the Mysterio family may have towards them by having them gang attack a guy that's considered himself a lone wolf.
You know what? Well, just maybe Rollins was right, you know?
Maybe.
Maybe
best wishes
really
to Seth and Becky going forward, by the way.
For the greater good. And the Mysterio family is not on track for the greater good. I'm really starting to believe the man.
The Mysterios aren't on the level, is what you're saying?
Nope. They're not on the same path. They don't see what he was trying to do.
Overall show rating for Raw. I see your rating on the report that you did, which can be found on 411mania.com/wrestling in the TV report section, or it's on the featured page right now because it's a new episode.
Yeah. I think I'm going to raise it up to 5. I forgot how much I enjoyed the Woods and Cedric moment until I spoke about it. But it just, the show didn't do it for me. The first hour dragged on. I felt so just ready to change the channel until I realized I couldn't. The triple threat brought me back to life. And then I just, you know, it was a slow roll downhill from there.
I'm going to go with a 6.5. Hear me out for this. The opening match I enjoyed more than you did, the Symphony of Destruction match. The Retribution stuff, I wasn't as offended by as you were, although I understand where you're coming from in terms of the booking of those two matches. We've been talking about how poorly Retribution's been booked since its inception on the show. It's beating a dead horse at this point. The Woods and Cedric match, while I don't think it was as good as you thought it was, I get your point about the intensity and the personal rivalry between Woods and Cedric and that being the catalyst going forward for these two teams to continue feuding. So I like the idea there, even if it is Tony doing some fantasy booking, which he absolutely fucking despises doing. I saw you, Acero. Don't think you got away with that.
I don't know what you're talking about. They're educated guesses.
I really enjoyed the triple threat. I really enjoyed the tag team main event. The two women's matches were what they were, but the triple threat match for the number one contendership and then the main event tag team match both more than made up for the inability of and the incompetence within the two other women's matches. So I gave it a 6.5. Plus, I thought that a lot of the backstage segments at least had some semblance of importance, and at least they had something to keep me entertained by them as well, with minimal exception. Because despite the fact that, like we talked about with the Riddle and MVP segment from last week being as enjoyable as it was, and then them bringing back those two interacting today, this week they put the twist on it with Lashley attacking Riddle to possibly set up the U.S. title picture going forward.
All right, cool.
Who's your MVP for the week?
Aw, Puddin'.
I'm going to go with Keith Lee. All three of them were great, but I don't know. I like Lee. I think that, you know, like I said earlier, I think people were looking for something to bitch about, whether it be his outfit or his size or his music. I don't care what he wears. I don't care what music he comes out to. Once that bell rings, the dude's a beast.
Speaking of his music, have you had a chance to listen to his new music yet? It's actually not bad.
Yeah.
Like the new theme song that he has now that he's rapping, it's actually not bad. It's not as good as the original CFO themes, but I understand why they're not using that anymore because of the disassociation with the CFOs group. My MVP for the week is Kevin Owens. And that really shouldn't surprise anybody after all of the praise that I've heaped on him throughout the entirety of this particular episode. I think that Owens once again proved that when he's given the opportunity to have something that he can sink his teeth into, he is maybe the best wrestler entertainer in the WWE right now.
Owens is great.
By the way, in case you couldn't tell, Tony had the control of the soundboard tonight, which is why I was waiting for that AJ Lee button to get pressed a lot earlier and a lot more often than it did.
Mm-hmm.
I congratulate you on your self-control, Tony.
Yeah, well, I was never a big fan of it. The rare occasions where I controlled the soundboard, I only did it to upset Greg. But that dude was a hound. He'd be every other damn noise was a sound clip.
I use them on occasion, but not as much as I used to.
Not nearly as much as him. He would get so mad. He would just kept saying, you know,
y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face.
Like he'd go to make a point and he'd cut you off with a sound effect?
Yeah, a lot. I think he was trying to
belittle my
awesomeness. Couldn't outshine him, you know?
Easy to do.
It is. No, Greg's one of my biggest supporters. That dude, if I wanted my own show, he'd give it to me. I don't.
For the record, the only reason I have this show is because he felt Tony needed somebody to help ground him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd be listening to the Tony Acero show here on the Chairshot Radio Network. I have no auspicions of anything otherwise.
Yeah, and you don't want that. One entire episode would be me reading a book just to piss people off. Don't give me my own show. Harry, you're a necessary component here.
Some would argue necessary evil. That's neither here nor there. Have you been following any of the WWE Network documentaries over the last month or so with the Taker influence?
No, I have a short list of who I want to watch and what I want to see. I have not had a day off, ironically enough, considering our place has been shut down for a while. Even on Thanksgiving, I was at the restaurant. Basically, you know, I got to write actual letters to lay everybody off. I got to make sure the schedule's set for the to-go orders. I had to decide who I was going to keep, who I was going to let go. I had employees calling me trying to plead their case. And, you know, I'm sensitive towards specific situations, but I don't like pandering. So it's really, I come off as a bit of an asshole, but like all that had to be done. And we had a total of 2 days notice before we had to close our doors. Got to deal with customers walking in, trying to sit down. Like, it's like no one watches the news, Harry. I don't understand it. So it's been very, very busy for me, and I don't see signs of it slowing down. It's really weird that I seemingly work more when we are making less. But I do have I want to see Liv, even if only because I've heard that it does give you a little bit of an insight on the creative team, and I want to see if they prove me correct. I want to see the upcoming Keith Lee one for sure. I'm interested.
I know you watched the Mortician one on Paul Bearer there. Have you had a chance to watch the second version of the Smoking Skull Sessions with Steve Austin and The Undertaker yet?
No, I that was on immediately after Survivor Series, and I was still at work. I was able to catch Survivor Series on the big screen, but very different than watching an interview, you know?
Of course. The action is something that you can keep people entertained with. Maybe an interview, not so much. No, I get it. All right, well, your homework assignment, should you choose to accept it, is to catch up on a couple of these documentaries throughout our downtime the next 2 weeks. And then when we reconvene here on the, I believe it would be the 13th. No, it would be the 14th, because tomorrow's the 1st. So when we reconvene on the 14th, we'll discuss a couple of the documentaries if you've had a chance to watch them. And if you haven't, then I'll just give my thoughts on them.
For sure.
All right. For the absent co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, and the down since day one co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. You have been listening to The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. You can find the radio network online at blogtalkradio.com/ChairShot Radio. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you in 2 weeks here on The Reaction, a presentation of thechairshot.com.
Deuces, bitches.